Frappin' Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 66th Berlinale. Today we're talking about A Quiet Passion by Terence Davies, screening here in the Berlinale Special Gala section, and I have with me Cynthia Nixon, who's the protagonist, who's portraying Emily Dickinson. So what have you been doing after Sex and the City and before A Quiet Passion?
I did a film that I'm nominated for an Independent Spirit Award in a couple of weeks called James White, Where I Die of Cancer, and then I did a mini-series 4 years ago called World Without End, where I kill a lot of people, and then I die really horribly, too.
You seem to enjoy that.
I do. I think the dying is good. I like the dying.
What's your relation to Emily Dickinson for this?
I was a fan of hers, an admirer of hers, since I was a child. My mother loved her, and so not only would we read her poetry, and we, of course, read it. I read it in school, too. But we had a record growing up of the actress Julie Harris reading some of her poems and also some of her letters that we would listen to, and you know that I almost memorized. I would listen to it so much. So I felt a real connection from a very early point.
So you actually enjoyed this change of pace after Sex and the City, and now you're dying, you're killing people. So is it much more of a relaxation for you in a way?
I don't know if it's much more of a relaxation, but there's a lot of variety in it. You know, I feel like I've been, in the last few years, been doing a lot of different kinds of roles, which is really exciting.
Emily Dickinson, you portray, is a very strong opinionated on gender roles, religion, family matters. So how much of it was it the script, and how much of it was your personal convictions?
Oh, I don't think any of it. I mean, it's all her. It's all her. Yes, I think that she was, you know, she's such an individual. She's not a person who certainly joined social movements. You know, whether she believed in social movements is another question. It was a time when, not only as a woman, but as a middle-class woman, I think she struggled with whether it was appropriate for her to publish her work or whether her work was good enough to publish. And I think that she drew a lot of strength from particularly the Brontes, and also, we don't mention them in the film, but Elizabeth Barrett Browning. I think she drew a lot of not so much Jane Austen, I don't think, but, you know, I don't think of her so much as a romanticist, but she really seems to like the romantic writers a lot. And I think that she felt she needed that encouragement of other people who had gone before, to help her along the way. But I think she also felt like it was a real struggle, and a lot of, you know, people at the time, men and women both, thought this was not appropriate for women to be writers.
How much of your interactions with her friend, for example, Miss Buffum, are based on reality?
Miss Buffum is a... There was a real person named Miss Ryling Buffum, but she was actually a friend of Vinnie's. But she's a compilation of a number of Emily's close literary female friends, and I think she's an invention of Terence's. But I think that she, I think one of the things that happens in the movie is Emily looks at these different women and look at these different paths that they've taken and tries to figure out her own path from them, whether it's her very depressive mother or whether it's her her aunt who's a little, you know, stuffy and bristly and not particularly sensitive, or whether it's Miss Ryling Buffum, who is so witty and charming and seemingly confident, but I think in the end Emily is astonished that she will sell herself as short as she does.
This variety of roles and your artistic growth and development seem to come after a lot of personal changes you've been experiencing in your life. Is that actually a coincidence?
Well, one of the things is, I turn 50 in a couple of months. And I think that, you know, when you're an actor or an actress, there are roles that have to do with you, but they also just have to do with the age bracket that you fit in. And so I think, when you're in when you're in your, I don't know, 25 to 35, 40, you know, you're kind of in your leading lady category. And then once you sort of age out of that, all of a sudden the roles start to get a lot more interesting, you know? I mean, I like to think it has to do with me, and maybe it has to, you know, I keep trying to grow as a person and as a performer, and but I also think it's, you know, it's sort of, when I was a, I always remember this thing that Laurence Olivier was asked, which was, what advice would you give to a young actor? The number one thing you would tell. And he said that the number one thing that a young actor should focus on is how to become an old actor. And I couldn't agree more. Do you know? And I, for me, there have been many high points in my career, and there have been some low points. But I, to me, the focus was always on the longevity. And I don't know. I think there, and I feel lucky to be living in a time when there are more women's stories being told and starting to be more older women's stories being told. So,
can you tell us more about the physicality and the physical aspects of your role? Considering that you also had to portray Emily Dickinson getting sick and being sick.
I guess one of the things that seems that I'm starting to notice about myself is that as an actor, so much of what you do is about language. And certainly in this, of course, language is very important, right? That's her, not only her business, but that's her, you know, reason for being, right? But I find that I really like to play the more animal parts of people. And that, right? And that nothing is more animalistic than when you're sick, because you can't, we have the illusion that we control our body, and a lot of the time that's sort of true, but when you're sick or when you're in pain, that illusion goes right out the window. So I actually, that's something I really like, you know, the non-verbal. I mean, I love being able to try my hand at saying the poetry, that's wonderful too, but I like the animal part.
You mentioned the exchange with your wife earlier, so do you usually consult with her about your roles, or you keep your private life separate from your work, in a sense?
You know, my wife is not a theater person. Like, my mother is dead now, but I used to consult with my mother all the time. My mother was a theater person, and but my wife has a really good, for a person who's a civilian, my wife has a really good eye. Yeah.
What made you accept the role, since would you have accepted only because it was about Emily Dickinson, or it was because it was also Terence Davis to direct it? He has his own way of portraying women respectfully, truthfully.
I mean, it was a lot of things. Certainly the opportunity to play Emily Dickinson in any context would have been very exciting to me. Then the idea that it was Terence, such an original filmmaker, and as you say, with such a great track record of female characters. But also, I love the script. I mean, I didn't totally understand the script, but I was really astonished by it. We know, there's so much we don't know about Emily Dickinson, but there is so much we do. And trying to synthesize that, and it's also, it's a very ambitious project. It's kind of her whole adult life. It's not just one little, you know, a year with Emily Dickinson. So I guess it was, and the fact that Terence said that he had pictured me when he was writing it, so he'd sort of written it with me in mind. I mean, that's, you don't hear that every day.
Well, there's no sex, there's no city, but there's comedy in this film. So how different was this way of acting in a comedy that has, you know, the dialogues and the voices of that particular time?
I mean, I think we were all gratified, the members of the cast and the producers and the crew that were here last night, that were at the screening. We were just so thrilled. There was so much laughter. I think we, you know. Yes, I think that was one of the things that one of the first things that Terence said about me was that he really didn't want this Emily to be solemn. I mean, that's the hard, when you're writing, when you're trying to depict a historical person who was very important in retrospect, whether they were important or not at the time, you know, you sort of, you seem like, you know, you feel like you're George Washington crossing the Delaware, you know, everything is, but I think, you know, And one of the first things Terrence told me was about that scene, which is so wild, where she smashes the plate. I mean, it's so unexpected. I think the thing about Emily is she had a very wicked sense of humor, not unlike Terrence. And I think she was, she was critical of a lot of things, certainly of herself, but a lot of things that she saw around her. And often when one is critical, unless one is really, you know, self-righteous and tiresome, that will lead to humor.
What do you have in common with Emily Dickinson?
I think that, less so now, but when I was young and when I was a child, I was an only child. And I was very shy around groups of people, and I was very reluctant to sort of sell myself or present myself in a way like, hey, I'm fantastic, come talk to me, you know?
When you think back to Sex and the City, is that a closed chapter of your life, or is it still alive in your memory, in your life?
Oh, I think it's very alive. I mean, it's also certainly alive for people on the street, whatever part of the world I go to. It's amazing to me. And it's not even just people of a certain age. It's old. It's young people, too. So, yeah, I'm very proud of it. And I'm very aware that, you know, 9/10 of the tremendous opportunities that I have now, I would not have without Sex and the City. Do you know what I mean? Terrence may not be a fan of Sex and the City, but, if without Sex and the City, I think he would have had an awfully hard time talking anyone into funding this film with me in it. He would have had to put someone else in it, you know.
Thank you, Cynthia Nixon, for being here with us for a Quiet Passion screening here in the Berlinale Special Gala section. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.